Welcome to the Wealth Conversation podcast. This podcast is for you if you believe that wealth is so much more than just money. At the Wealth Conversation, we believe that wealth encompasses our physical, spiritual, mental, social, and financial well-being. I'm your host, Tsitsi Mutiti, and I will be having conversations with financial experts and people just like you and me who are on the journey to building lasting generational wealth. If this resonates with you, then I encourage you to hit the subscribe button so you get notifications of when our next episode will go live. For now, let's get into this week's conversation. Welcome to the Wealth Conversation podcast. Today, I'm joined by the amazing Lydia Amwa. Lydia is an entrepreneur. She is a cultural change agent and the author of the Black Pound Report, which we will be discussing. Yes. We'll try and get through as much of it as possible because I think it's such an important piece of research. And it's starting to impact a lot of what companies are doing. And for me, after reading the report, I thought to myself, wow, there's a lot that multi-ethnic people in the multi-ethnic communities can be doing with their money. So welcome, Lydia, to the Wealth Conversation podcast. It's such an honor to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Great. Before we get started, please could you share with the listeners a little bit about you and maybe give us a bit of background on the Black Pound Report?
Yeah, so as you introduced me very well, my name is Lydia Amwa, the founder of the Black Pound Report and also Backlight, which is an award-winning research and insights agency. But before even stepping into having our agency Backlight, before that, I've had many different roles or industries that I've been able to contribute towards. Personal development and learning is always, if you was to cut me open, that would be, like the line running through me.
Okay.
Always learning and always developing. I think that's so important for all of us in this life. You know, you get to one level, then there's another level to achieve, you know, so you're always growing. Mm. And I think it's always best in life that you have that mindset to be teachable and to be coachable. And with regards to the Black Pound Report and a bit about me, I've always had an interest in, I love sports. At school, I loved sports and I loved creativity. So that was that type of person when I, you know, I could see that in my nature growing up. And I was always like a big sky thinker. And I think teachers somehow didn't know how to sort of manage me because I was always like blue sky thinking, you know, what can we do here? And I'm writing poetry. So all of these different types of backgrounds, I believe, has led me to this point of creating the Black Pound Report from observing behavior through being a coach and work. We can talk about maybe that a bit later on, but my coaching background. But I could actually tell you the reason why I began the report. Would that be a good
That would
start?
Be fantastic. In fact, that was going to be my first question regarding the report.
Okay.
You know, what motivated you to start this report?
Yeah.
And, you know, just for those who are listening and watching, you and I met many, many years ago.
We did.
And it was at a time when I was looking for information on, you know, how much do people in the Black community particularly earn? What's the median salary?
Yeah.
There was a lot of research about, you know, $1 in the Black community in the US lasts so many days or hours, and in the Asian community, this, in the Jewish, and all the research and information I could find was based on the US.
Yes.
And nothing UK based. And I think I came across you, it was on Instagram, you were talking about basically what's now the Black Pound Report, I think. And I didn't know that you were at the beginning of that journey.
Yeah, I was.
But, you know, there's so many big companies out there, so many research companies, et cetera, and no one had done that. So what motivated you, Lydia Amwa,
can you imagine?
To do this?
That's, when you put it like that, even I still get taken aback by that, that we've got these mighty research agencies out there and, you know, they touched on it, but not in such rigor and really exploring who we are, our patterns, behaviors, and all of that. And I felt that in my life, I had so many different milestones that led to this point, to where we are, you know, now with the Black Pound Report. Mm. One was at school. There's a bit misinterpretation of my gifts and my talents and how to nurture me as a student, you know, projection on what was I going to achieve. Questions, you know, when it came to, you know, talking about, oh, what do you want to do when you get older? Mm. And I said, I'd like to be a counsellor. But little did I know that I meant to be a coach, because I identified that I love people.
Right.
And I like solving problems. That's always been with me. I'm always finding solutions. I was like that since the get-go. And that stayed in my mind because it was the wrong perception. So I thought, if people are having, not people, I say people in authority are having the wrong type of view or assessment on who Black and multi-ethnic people are as people, that's a big issue. That goes into so many other things. And then within my career, and a good career, good experiences, lots to learn. But then I never did see anybody like myself at the CEO level, you know, making key decisions for the business from the very top of the business to the entry of the business. All of that. So I think lifetime experiences, but there was one specific experience when I was in my 20s, a little while ago. And I was in a department store, a colleague of mine, white lady, and she was able to buy all the makeup. And I do like makeup. I just love makeup. And she had all the choice of the shelf. When it came to me, I said to the lady, what do you have for me? Give me some advice. What do you recommend? And just at that appointment, my excitement went straight to the ground. She just said, I'm sorry, we only stock colours for normal skin tones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Normal.
Yeah, normal.
Okay.
She said, you have to go to your own area.
Okay.
Somewhere else, mm-hmm. but not here. She said it completely straight-faced. Mm. It's as though it was part of the training for the establishment. Yeah. If you ever hear any people, brown folks, that walk into the store, tell them to go to where they belong. It almost felt like it was part of the training, mm-hmm. because her face was so straight-faced.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. And I left the store 360 out of there. And I just said to my colleague, you know, one day I'm going to do something about there, because there's got to be a time that we can both walk into a hairdresser's, we can get our hair done. We can go to a department store, shopping department store, buy the foods that we like, you know, go to a makeup store, something as basic as makeup.
Mm.
Come on, that's got to be a service and a product that most people should be able to put their hands towards. And that stuck within me. I didn't know that it would end up being the Black Pound Report. But in a way, that piece of adversity turned out to be my opportunity to do the work that I'm doing today. And it started from there, really, being told that you can't be included in this particular experience. We don't see you worthy to market to as a human being, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the messages I took away from it. And that's what was stirring up inside of me. Then it took to me watching the movie, I always say, Think and Grow Rich, the movie, watching that. I think you and I discussed that. Yes. Remember?
I've watched that movie. And it's because of you yes. that I watched it. You told me about it.
From these people, exactly. You know?
You should.
I'm going to get in touch. Yes.
It's phenomenal,
yes.
phenomenal movie about just real average people talking about how they've navigated life yeah. and built wealth.
Yeah.
And I just, I absolutely love it's it. Amazing. I watched it, I think it was on Apple.
Yes.
Right. So I had to pay for it at yes, the time. I'm yeah. not sure if it's still one of those that you have to pay for,
yeah.
but worth every penny.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Such a good book. It's a great book, but I also, because I'm a visual person, yes. so watching the movie was just brilliant for me. I felt as though I was sitting there with the people that were involved in the documentary. And one of the people that really spoke to me, I think I told you, was Dr. Dennis Kimbrough.
Yes.
He's in Atlanta. He's based in Atlanta. He's a professor there, and he's wrote books like Think and Grow Rich, Black Choice, mm-hmm. which Napoleon Hill originally began to write, but unfortunately he passed away. So there was this manuscript, about 100-page manuscript that was just left there until they appointed Dr. Dennis Kimbrough to finish the book off.
Mm-hmm.
And that was entitled Think and Grow Rich, Black Choice. And when he spoke, there was a couple of things that he said. You know, he said, time's not running out, but yours is. That spoke to me big time.
Mm.
Because few years prior to that, my mum had passed and she was my bestie and I love her so much. And I hope I'm still doing her proud. And I just thought life is actually so precious. Mm. So we've got to make the most of it. And then the other one was, there's a story about Mary Bethune.
Yes.
Do you remember that story? Yes. That just, again, something about her reminded me of my mum because of her grit and her resilience. She was born into an enslaved family. I think there's about 15. I think she had 15 siblings.
There were quite a lot of them. I can't remember.
There was a lot, wasn't there? And she was the fifth, you know, as in the youngest. And she used to walk 5 miles to school every day and 5 miles back. And she felt she was all about education and basically that you're wherever you come from, whatever your background is, it should never define you. Mm. If anything, that should give you the gumption to move forward and go for what you want and all of that. And then I just felt, I felt this download, as spiritual as it may sound, but it was a download saying that we as people, Black and multi-ethnic people, but leaning into Black people as well, Black and brown folks, we really need to understand our value, who we are as people intrinsically. And I was speaking to myself at that time as well, not just me, all of us. Mm. And that, and then it came to finances. You had a conversation, I think at that time, over maybe 9 years ago that we met, that it was a pound circulates the Black community for like 6 hours.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's changed now.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's changed.
A lot of time has passed.
A lot of time has passed.
You know, for me, this is why the wealth conversation is so important.
Without
because
a doubt.
We need to, you know, people from Black and multi-ethnic communities, I believe, should be working towards keeping that pound or the money that they're earning in the community for much longer than 6 hours. I think the world has been used to us being consumers. What I'm seeing now more and more is people building businesses, which is so exciting.
Yeah.
It's really so exciting. I think, you know, there were a lot of support went to Black businesses in 2020.
Yes.
Because of the murder of George Floyd. May his soul rest in peace.
Yeah.
And it started a movement and people sort of
woke up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Seemed to wake up and think about, like you're saying, started thinking more about their value intrinsically. You know, who are we?
Definitely.
What value do we hold? Mm. And how much actually are we worth?
Exactly.
Which is a point that is raised in the Black Pound report.
Yeah. Yes.
You highlight that there is 4.5 billion of annual disposable income among multi-ethnic communities.
There is, yes.
That is a lot of money. And so that's the amount of money that these communities have collectively to spend. It's disposable.
Exactly.
They can spend it on anything and everything that they want.
And everything. I mean, the great thing about speaking to you is your background and what you do as well. You know about wealth management. Mm. You understand all of this. And I know a long time ago when you and I started speaking about your vision, and it's so wonderful to see what you're doing and
the
impact that you're making. It's incredible. I'm so happy to be here as well. It's just like another 360 moment. You never know what happens. But yes, it's so true. Because when I first felt about this story of intrinsically understanding our value and our worth, with some people got it. And not everybody gets your vision until they see it play out. But until we understand who we are intrinsically, externally, well, basically what happens externally is a reflection of what happens intrinsically.
100%.
Mm. And that's why it's not about thinking, I haven't made it yet. You can start today. Anybody can start today. And then once you start valuing yourself internally, then externally, you can make some really good choices. And as you said, Black people especially were perceived as those people are just consume. As soon as they get their money, it goes out.
Mm-hmm.
No thinking about pension, no thinking about mortgage, no thinking about stocks and shares, no thinking about just a little bit of saving.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be a lot because it all depends upon how much disposable income that person has, but it's about doing something. And even if you're spent, even if you save and you need to use it, at least you have the money there to use for an emergency.
Yeah.
you know? So that's really important. And I know that money, again, is an exchange, it's a tool. But again, it's a reflection of how we perceive and how we see ourselves. Mm. If we see ourselves as we were fearfully and wonderfully made, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. That's what I believe.
Yes.
And that's something, again, that we have to always work on daily. Because you can get there and do a load of work and then you can forget. Yep. So that's why I know that money talks. As me and Dr. Kimbra used to say, money's right up there with oxygen. You know, we need it. We need it.
Yeah.
You know, we absolutely need it.
Yeah.
But then when we started doing the research, and I remember we were coming back, it felt like I was on CSI or something, you know, because all the data was coming back. Like, what is that? What? £2.7 billion on makeup? Are you joking? And I thought about that time when I walked into that department store and, oh, you're not worth spending. You know, we weren't catering. We don't cater to you. You're not enough of an audience. We didn't even have 30% of the shelf at over 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Things are changing now, but still, we still need more percentage of the shelf.
Yes.
And all of that. And then the data would come back, you know, if you think about wealth. I thought it said 62.5 million. They said, no, Lydia, this is 62.5 billion we have in savings and investments.
That is a lot. It's
sitting in
the banks.
And you know, loans, 10 billion in loans.
Mm.
But the underwriting of our loans is higher than our counterparts.
Mm.
Because the banks subliminally still see multi-ethnic consumers, audiences as a risk.
That's very interesting. And I want us to touch on what financial services can do.
Yes.
To improve the relationship with Black and multi-ethnic communities.
Yes.
Especially since I know the foundation or the target for the Black Pound report was the brands and companies thinking about becoming more inclusive and giving access to, as you say, the products that, that we use daily and also the services that other communities have been benefiting from for a long, long time. And for me, as everyone knows, financial services, I'm very passionate about making it open to everyone and giving people the knowledge that they can actually approach a bank, a wealth management firm, and have a conversation with someone. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to take up the product.
Yes.
But at least you've got that confidence and that self-worth to say, you know, I want to build generational wealth. I want to understand how how that works and how other communities are doing that and starting to have those conversations, especially since your report has shown clearly that the money is there.
The money is there. You know, the money is absolutely there. There's a few things when I listen to what you're saying, but one of the things I'd like to start with is a narrative. If you think about when you look at the newspapers, listen to the news or the stories that are told about the Black and brown community, there's so much exciting and really good, great stories to be told. Great stories to be told of the contributions that we're making as a people, to society, to our own communities, beyond our communities, broadly, worldwide. That narrative, sometimes, you know, at the moment, this whole conversation about DEI, and there's obviously a big, huge rollback on it.
Yes.
But when we're speaking about market opportunities, that's not DEI. It's part of DEI, essentially, of part of being the inclusive part of it and so on. And the reason why I mention that is because we don't want certain situations to happen to make us go backwards, especially after how far we came since 2020, since the unfortunate death of George Floyd, of course. There's all of that. But I like what you said. We have to have the experiences to be able to walk in and have the experience to talk about our wealth and how we can prepare for generational wealth, our present wealth, because that's what other communities and cultures are doing very well. They ensure that things are in place,
yep.
that is within the family, and they can actually measure it eons back, decades back, years, 100 years back. Mm-hmm. It can be like that with or more. You know this.
Yeah.
And it is beginning to happen within our community, but it needs to happen more and more.
Yeah.
So, and with the Black Pound Report, it just uncovered so much. We looked into health and beauty. We looked into finance. We looked into the business. You know, we ended up having data and some insights on Black business owners and multi-ethnic business owners. Mm. And because we obviously explored every single culture, and we looked into media, we looked into travel. And with every area that we really explored, what was very paramount is that we were definitely being untapped, mm-hmm. underestimated, mm. you know, the underdog, or everything under, untapped.
Yeah.
But yet, that's not the whole story. I'm here to say that that's not the whole story of who we are. Mm-hmm. Yes, in every culture, in every background, you will have different demographics. People who are at the, you know, I don't want to say low end, but basically the income may not be as high. Different levels of income is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Sorry. Different levels of income. But the story and the narrative that's told a lot regarding our is not the higher end. They always will discuss, you know, marginalized. They use language like marginalized, mm-hmm. impoverished, you know, mm-hmm. underrepresented. Mm. And we know in business psychology that when people hear those types of words, they switch off after a while, mm-hmm. because they want to get back to business.
Yeah. It's about the bottom line.
It's about the bottom line.
How much can we bring in? And so,
and that is what business is about.
Yeah.
You know, that is what business, and that's what the Black Pound Report is here to show, that it adds zeros to the bottom line, both for the people that I'm discussing, the audience that I'm referring to in the report, as well as the business. Mm. To me, it's so clear. It's a clear cut that there's no way you could possibly misunderstand it. One of the things I do see is that even though it's had huge success, you know, been featured in Forbes, we've had in Vogue, we've had Edward Edinfalls, supporters and backers. It's been everywhere. We've had News UK, mm-hmm. being a main partner, and Channel 4, all these great, great, great names. And that gives it power. That gives it leverage. And that enables people to trust the data. Because when it came to the first report, some people or some businesses would say, I think she's making those figures up. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember you going through those trials of getting the report in front of people, getting support, because that's around the time that we started knowing each other and working together.
You came to the launch, I think.
Yes, I did. And and I don't know for you whether you're definitely passionate about this, but I'm sure a lot of people thought that first iteration was it.
I was a baby in the beginning. I was.
So
yeah.
Before we move on to digging into the report, I just want to pause and ask you to share your journey in birthing the Black Pound Report from, you know, those early days it was just you to now where, as you say, it's been featured in Forbes, et cetera. Because I think sometimes, you know, we get a PDF or a research document and we read it and there's, you know, all the stats, and then we start to implement whatever we've decided based on those statistics. But it's very rare that we understand what has gone in to creating that, especially this type of research, which hasn't been done, as far as I'm concerned, to this level.
It hasn't.
And this has actually been created by an individual. I'm sure you've built a team along the way, but early days.
Oh my gosh.
Tell us about the investment that you made with your disposable income.
When you think of that, when you work for a company, if you think about, you could be on a 50, 60, 70K salary, and plus and more. So if you think about stripping that back to, I'm running my own business, so I'm not working for anybody. just imagine that. And then it means you've got your regular things that you have to pay out for, your mortgage, you know, all your bills and everything else, and all of that. So it meant that things had to go on hold. Mm-hmm. It meant that payments were missed. And I was so focused and resilient. And particular family members would say, are you sure? Mm. Are you going after this? Can't you just do something part-time here, there? But I was obsessed with it. I literally was tunnel vision, you know, tunnel vision about this. And it was really tough because I wanted to see if I could get, it's almost like I started back to front because I didn't start by seeking investment, but as I began to go, I thought, I definitely need some type of money because it's a lot. Because you're doing, you know, you're drafting the questions, you're making sure the questionnaire's right, you're doing your bit of research to make sure, and I knew that nothing else existed, but you still have to make sure. So I believe I was running on gas.
Okay.
Or fresh air, should we say. You know, that's what I was running on. And I had people like Dr. Dennis Kimbrough that I would speak to who would really encourage me and help me make sure I was shaping the research in the right way. And he just said to me, girl, with my reputation, if this research is right, my name is not right, my name stays off it. Okay. So with him saying that, it made me realise how serious it is what I'm doing, and there's so many things they have to get right, and there's things you're going to make mistakes, mm-hmm. but nothing could take away doing it. I had a colleague of mine, Barbara. She's a psychologist, so that was really great to have a psychologist and to analyze and be a part of the research as well. And another colleague as well that helped. And there were certain people, and even a good friend of mine, Adama, she knows about data. She's a data scientist. She would get involved and help me. So I was pulling in favors left, right, and center.
Right.
That's all I could do. Mm. I've got this vision, guys. This is what it is. You know, telling people this is what I believe it's going to be. It's going to be something great. Some people will be like, good luck with that.
Yeah.
good luck with that. You know, I remember there was a colleague, I won't say who it was, but somebody in the industry said, I hear that you're doing this thing. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
That's what this person said, as if to say, it's not happening.
Yeah.
But it hurt. I remember when sometimes people would say these types of things, it would hurt. And I'm thinking, this is not just about me, it's about you as well, you know? But then that gave me fire as well. Some days just wasn't much at all. Some days there just wasn't much. You just didn't know. I might do the odd coaching thing here. Not that much really, because this had to take full on attention. Mm. So we're talking about living. So if we're talking about a wealth choice, we're talking about a wealth conversation and all these things, literally, I know what that means, you know, to be doing that. But then I'll never forget, we were in conversation and I was in conversations with people that really believed in it. And that gave me, whether you realise it or not, gives you energy and belief that I'm on the right track. There were times when I'd say to my colleague, can you help me? And I'd say, proofread all of this, make sure it's okay. And they said, oh yes, we'll do that with you. And then they would look, that I just felt I'm on my own in this. Mm-hmm. Even though I had people around me, sometimes I thought, this is a vision that God gave me. You know, and now I'm sitting here with it, and I had to, and you really have to work on your faith. You've really got to work on your belief. There were sometimes literally I just slumped on the floor, hands on my head, like, what am I doing? It would never stop me.
Right.
It would never stop me. Always moving forward. And then eventually when it was ready, the report was designed, it started to come together, and then a flow began, and I'd speak to Sky, BBC, all those places, and they got it. Because by that time, I was over being hungry. I was like a lion. I was lioness. I was like a lioness.
Yeah.
This is what it is.
Yes.
I've got this figure, 300 million in disposable income at that time. I thought it was, but it was actually more.
Yeah.
You know, the data is so key. We've got statistics on how do Black and multi-ethnic people feel they're being represented by the media. Mm. This is really important. This is some information about our finances, educating the audience and saying, look, our money is only lasting 6 hours. And do you want to stay? Do we want to stay where we are, or do we want to move forward? Mm. You know, if you want to move forward, it's a we thing. It's not somebody else that can do that for us. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's where it began. And then I spoke to Sky. They said your number count, because it was 300 at the time, it's just not long. It's not a large enough number.
Yeah.
So we'd love to feature you, but next time, you know, if you can get about even a minimum of 1,000, 2,000, we'll definitely feature you. So that's something.
So it was 1,000, 2,000 in terms of...
Survey numbers.
Oh, survey numbers, right.
For it to be credible enough to be featured on television or to be written about, you know. But what happened is, the great thing is the BBC jumped on top of it, because on the launch night, BBC were in the room, ITV were in the room, other research agencies came to sort of, what's happening here?
Yes.
You saw that. And they were asking me all these different questions and this, that, and the other. And I remember somebody said, look, obviously, we are real researchers. Somebody said that to me in an email after the launch event.
Wow.
Obviously, we're real researchers. So if you want to work with us, you'll do better next time. And I thought, okay, fine. All these things, lessons to learn. Thank you. I'm smiling on the inside, but you don't know, there's a ferocious wolf on the inside, but I'm going, okay, fine. You know, but this was really good. Everything was feedback. It was really good feedback for me to make sure that when I do the next one, but I thought I'm not taking anything away from the first one because it's almost like it was a rippling effect. Something had begun and I could feel it. It was tangible. Mm. And, you know, we were able to do a tour with BBC about the report and that was just brilliant. And I've built really good connections and Campaign magazine covered the story still. Mm-hmm. So it did really well in 2018. It began something, but it still stuck with me. And even though after that, obviously it's there, the data was there, people were buying it, advertising agencies were, you know, were looking into it, beginning to, you know, observe. Then comes along 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
Something said to me, do it. Do it again, you know, but this time you're going to go, you've got all the information. Mm. I have the information that I didn't have before.
Mm.
And that's when I was able to pitch to News UK, as you know, it's Rupert Murdoch's business.
Yeah.
And they run the Times, TalkSport, Virgin Radio, the whole lot. They were very interested and they wanted to have access to the Black and multi-ethnic market. They wanted to have a stake in the ground. Mm. They wanted the insight. And they knew that there wasn't any other agency out there that could do it in the way that Backlight could, because we've got the relationship, the trust, you know, and access.
And you're from that community.
And exactly, yeah. And from that community. You can't compete with me on my ethnicity. You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's such a wonderful story. And I felt it was important that you share that, because sometimes you get a service, you receive a product or a book, a report. Yes. And the journey is as equally important as the statistics.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that's a good title for a book. If I nick it, don't come after me.
I'll be coming to you for royalties. So you touched on the vision you were given, your values, and you felt that this was so important. And one thing that you uncovered in the research is that when Black and multi-ethnic individuals think about spending their money, they also take into account their values. They also take into account what they believe to be true or what they believe businesses should be doing. Mm. What are some of the things that actually came up when you were talking to the people who responded? Yeah, to the people who responded to the survey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite interesting. We did focus groups.
Mm.
And because we were guiding the questions, writing the questions for all of us collectively, when the focus groups, you could see them, they're recorded, and you see how emotional people got when they answered the questions. And I was surprised, you know, when you're doing market research or you're doing research, you don't realise that actually what a question can do, how it can trigger a person.
Mm.
And I began to realise how much it meant. And everything came to about being seen. Number one, do you see me? If you see me, then you know how to market to me, because it's not just somebody on a cutting floor throwing us into the story without real actual knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what this research does. It provides you with what we call qualitative research, which is, it's telling you like a story is unfolding insights. Every person on the report, so every person that was surveyed within the report said that they felt it was really important that the companies that they bought from valued them as a consumer. How could they value them as a consumer? They wanted to see them represented either inside the business or whether it be at the, you know, front facing, but they needed to know that that company, and at this time it was a big thing, D&I is a big thing, of course it is, but at that time they wanted to make sure, what were the values? You know, these are ethical consumers. A lot of them are exploring, you know, I want to look at your website. I want to see who's, you know, what does the management team look like? Mm-hmm. Is anybody that looks like us at the top of the business at all? They will explore and study things like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Or the employees within the business. What's the percentage of employees within the business? A lot of black and brown, multi-ethnic consumers look into these things. Standard.
Yeah.
So if it's not happening, why now should I actually shop with you? You're not even considering me in your research and development stage. I come as an afterthought, but you may or may not want my money, but I'm probably shopping with you, but not realizing that you're not really truly catering. I was at an event the other day and somebody said, this couple of conversations politicized. It's not a political conversation. It's a factual conversation. If you're not being inclusive with audiences, and when I say audiences, are specifically black and brown and multi-ethnic Asian audiences, and not just, I'm not just talking about an advert, although that's lovely, don't get me wrong. The other day I was passing a bus stop and I saw an advert and of a woman, she was, you know, she was from Kenya and it was like a money transfer advert.
Right, yes.
You know, and I did smile. It just made me smile. You know, so obviously these things matter.
Yeah.
That's important as well. To be seen, everybody wants to be seen.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be ignored, feel ignored. And that might sound simple, but it's not, because it's in part, it's intrinsic, it's everything. That means that you can walk into a business like yours and be able to be seen, to know that actually you're used to seeing somebody like myself. That I can come in and you won't be like, oh my gosh, who's this person? Yeah, why are they asking about, you know,
yeah, investments and things, yes,
and so on and so forth. But that was a common thing. They wanted to feel valued, they wanted to be seen, and if they didn't feel that you were represented, the audience didn't feel they were being represented or understood or feel that they were being valued as a consumer, as an audience, then that meant a lot.
Yeah, I get that, because that's how I think about, you know, how I'm spending my money. Obviously, there's certain things that you know, there's no other alternative.
Exactly,
and I think sometimes those businesses, I'll say, are lucky because of that. But what is interesting is as the years go by, people in the communities that you focused on, are starting to build these businesses.
Are.
It's so exciting
to see.
We're starting to create these businesses. And one thing that I've noticed more, I'd say since we've gone past the pandemic, is we're starting to support each other.
Definitely.
A bit more, without a doubt.
And it's
a genuine support.
It is.
I think in the past it used to be, what is Lydia doing? Yeah. Who does she think she is?
And
which is amazing to see, which for me just makes me so confident that when it comes to building wealth, we are on the right track.
Yeah, we are.
You know, we're on the right track. You can't build it on your own, definitely.
No, you definitely You can't do it by yourself.
You need the community. Yeah. And the exciting thing about the Black Pond Report, I know we've only just touched on a handful of stats, but that $4.5 billion of disposable income, it's available.
It's available.
And so thinking of that, is there anything that you've thought of or anything that came up whilst you were doing the research in terms of how the black and brown and multi-ethnic community could actually work together to mobilize this disposable income and build, you know, for me, I'm passionate about lasting generational wealth, and that could look like investments. It could look like trusts. It could look like businesses, which are a great generator of income and capital. So
that's a very good question. And I've got so many answers in my head. Number one, something as basic as paying it forward, you know, whether that be if you're mentoring a younger person, and instilling some of the knowledge and greatness that we have into their greatness. Mm. Can you imagine who they would be?
Yeah.
They will supersede us. Because they say that your children are supposed to supersede you.
Indeed.
You know, and it doesn't have to be your blood child. It could be a younger person because we're family.
Yes.
As I say, it takes a village, right?
Indeed.
To raise a family,
yes.
And everything else like that. So passing on knowledge, mentoring, coaching, I do that all the time. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine my requests I get every week? I have got knowledge to the billions, but that, you know, let's prophesy, oh, one day I'll have the billions, but people seem to think I've got access to all this money that I'm talking about. You know, maybe I should have shares or something.
Yeah.
But that's one thing. And like you say as well, because you're an expert in this area, making sure that some basic savings, stock shares, you know, learn about generational wealth, actually sewing into our own community more, which is happening.
Yeah.
Now, apologies. I'm noticing that's happening more now, that something what we can do is make that pound last longer.
Mm.
So we can change the narrative from the inside out. I'd like to see, and it is happening, that we change the way that we speak about ourselves. We don't recite what the media says. We don't recite what other people are saying. We talk about ourselves in a great way. And then when we do that, we become more powerful and people naturally will, then all of a sudden, it'd be a lot more easier to get a grant or to get a loan or to get a mortgage, you know, or to walk in and talk about, okay, I want to find out about how can I generate wealth or maintain my wealth.
Mm.
These things will come a lot more naturally.
Yeah.
Also, I'd say that people within our community, like people like yourself, you've got the knowledge and expertise. You're doing this now by running the wealth conversation. More of the, you know, more information, education will make us great. Apart from that, then what can we act in doing? Well, I know that recently I spoke to a colleague that said, you know, there's a Pentecostal bank that's opening.
Yes.
It has opened.
Yeah.
So what? How about imagine having an account with them?
Yeah. That is so, so exciting.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I came across that. I don't know what I was actually looking for when I came across it.
Can you imagine?
But, you know, and again, for me, because I'm in financial services, I understand what they would have probably had to go through to get the registration through and the approvals.
You need to get them in.
And to see, actually, great idea.
You need to get them in.
I'm going
to
make a note. But yeah, if we can do that. And we've been, in a way, banking for a long time amongst ourselves. There's the partner, which, you know, generations before ours used to do. And I know some people are still doing that.
Yeah.
In Zimbabwe, where I'm originally from, we call it the around, where people are putting money together every month and then the lump sum goes to one person and then it passes down. You know, that's how people are doing it. And, and you know, why can't we do it in a more formal way?
Do you know, something just came to me that we've got to get over ourselves in some particular way.
Okay.
Because there's always going to be some form of issue that is going on, and it's about building trust. And sometimes we can spoil things for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you talk about land, because wealth also comes in, you know, what's been passed down through family and so on and so forth.
Yes.
All of this is really important.
Yes.
So ways that we can create calmness and, you know, think about the long term, not the short term.
Mm.
But, you know, it's obviously personal to everybody. It's personal to everyone, but what I would really want is for us to continue to value ourselves because so much comes from that. And to dictate our terms.
Mm.
Someone said to me, a good friend David of mine from the Unlocked Potential Awards said, you know, I love what you do, Lydia. He said, but just remember, they need you as much as you need them. You know.
And when he said they, he was referring
meaning
to?
Meaning like businesses, you know, for example.
Yes.
You know, people who invest in and partner with me on creating the next Black Pound Index. That's the next one, you know, that's up and coming. It's still the Black Pound Report, but we're focusing on the indexing because in business they focus on indexing.
I'll be asking you to break that down a bit more for us. That's exciting news.
Yeah. But so what I mean is that if I'm, as I go around, and do you imagine with all this success, sometimes you go to a place and go to a business and you talk to them as, you know, about either using the data, subscribing to it,
mm-hmm.
or becoming a partner for the next one, because, you know, it's, we're living in a completely different time now, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah.
From 2022 to 2025, the world is completely different.
Yeah.
It's gone, it's had a massive turnaround.
Yeah.
Everything has changed.
Massive shift.
Massive shift.
Yeah.
But great things are still happening.
Indeed.
The difference is great things are still happening. A lot more, many more Black-owned businesses are launching every week, every month, every year. You know, they need support, because another piece of research that my agency did with Channel 4,
mm-hmm.
it was the Black in Business, the UK's untapped potential.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a partnership project with Clear Channel and The Good Side as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was built, some of the data was built off the back of the Black Pounds report, because we were able to extrapolate a lot of information about employees.
Right.
Who had a high propensity to start a side business, because they wanted to rise up in the business, and maybe that was not happening for them.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
I normally think of people starting a side business or a side hustle because they're trying to get more income, increase their income.
Yeah, that is that. That is.
But by digging down into it, you've discovered that actually it's because they're not seeing the progression.
Yeah, they're not seeing the progression.
In the companies that they're working.
Most companies, if they're not taking care of their employees, Black or brown folks, and probably all, but especially
yeah.
you know, Black and brown, Black and multi-ethnic, they're already planning an exit strategy.
Mm.
They'll be leaving soon. Mm. Because what happens is, sustainably, a lot of businesses, you know, they want to attract talent,
yes.
incredible talent,
yeah.
but they don't know how to sustain.
No.
And then you've got all these different ERG groups, people who will all agree with each other, you know, they mm-hmm. all agree. I'm not mm-hmm. saying they're not worth,
yeah.
but they definitely all agree with each other. And then they have to do all the hard work. And it's great. There's a community, there's a connection, but that's on top of their role already. Mm. And then they go back to the CEO or the decision maker, and some businesses will be doing something differently.
Mm.
Mm. From my knowledge and expertise is that sometimes that these are great. Listen, don't get me wrong, they're great. But if you want to talk about business and results, what happens with the findings? What is changing within the business to sustain the talent? Because you know that recruitment, to recruit somebody, it could cost £60,000 to recruit and find the right person for the role. Then you get the right person for the role, but the environment's not correct.
Yeah.
It's not set up. Then you ask them to go and solve the problem that hopefully they could be involved with themselves, and then they leave.
Yeah.
And so what happened before they leave, they'll be getting ready to start their side business, be thinking, you know what? There isn't actually a glass ceiling, but there's a perceived glass ceiling,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not getting where I want to be within this business.
Mm.
So already starting a business.
Yeah.
And then what that person needs when they go off to start their own business is what we all need: help making sure that you've got a really good, you know, business case together, making sure you've got a business plan, all these things that you have to do. And get on with it. But yeah, that's a big thing. A lot of people we uncovered in the Black Pound report are getting ready to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also found out they're getting ready to leave. That we also found out that actually, given the right opportunity, the right training, coaching, a training workshop, to be seen, to be valued, they outdo their fellow work colleagues.
Mm, mm.
So wouldn't you want somebody that works for your business that needs to be given some support like any other person, give them that support and they're making waves in your business. They're doing incredibly well for you in business.
Yeah.
That's what I would want.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You know.
And as the, you know, we talked about a shift in the world.
Yes.
The world of, you know, in our personal world and also the world of business.
Yeah.
Everything has become more competitive.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But also I think since the pandemic, we have realized how valuable we are as individuals. As you said that, I'll ask you to repeat it again, yes. the quote about time.
Yeah.
That
time is not running out, but your life is, you know.
Exactly.
You've been named, you put your fingerprint on it and go for it. That's quoted the words of Dr. Dennis Kimbrough.
Yeah, 100%. And I think we were all made aware of that during the pandemic.
Yes.
And so for business owners with employees, they have to be aware that this is how people are thinking now.
Yeah.
Right? This is how people are thinking. This, I don't have time. So
I don't have time.
I need to make the most of. At the same time, I don't have time to be spending my money with you if you don't see me.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? If you don't see me, if you don't value me.
Yeah.
You know, gone are the days before when people would wear all the designer labels and that designer label was their identity.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
You know, when we're younger, you think, oh, let's wear this particular designer label.
Yes.
Everyone likes to wear nice things. I get that. Fine. Yes. But the label, you know, was a bit of a message to the world.
Yes.
You know, I'm wearing Gucci, I'm wearing Louis Vuitton, I'm wearing, you know, Burberry, whatever, Ralph Lauren, all of these things. But gone are the, people still love those brands. I'm just talking about, that's me just talking fashion.
Yeah.
Love those brands. But a different thing is now, there are so many Black-owned businesses, Asian businesses that are designing their own amazing brands. Mm. And they always have been, but there's more of a focus on them.
Yeah.
So people are beginning now to shop with their own community.
Yeah.
Now, so if these businesses do not wake up and they're thinking short term, that's a, I think that's a problem. I've said so many things in once, but if the businesses do not wake up in the next 5 years, they have to ask themselves, will they have a business?
Yeah, yeah. And it is really playing out. I see it on the stock market when you're seeing how certain businesses, you know, their shares aren't performing because there's so many challenges now.
Yeah.
Footwear, when it comes to trainers, there are so many brands out there now. It's not your traditional,
now that's what I mean.
You know, tick it's and three stripes, and there's there's so much out there.
Yeah.
It's,
I love them, how really much knowledge you know as well, because the other day I had a chance to go to London Stock Exchange.
Yes.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
To be there at 8 o'clock in the morning when the market opens.
That's amazing. I've never been. Yeah. So you've done what? Hello, London Stock Exchange. I've been in the industry for 18 years. I haven't been there.
That was exciting. Yeah. And you got to sign the book.
Oh,
just in 200 years time. There's like a 200 year old tradition. I think about that. So our names were written in the book, but just watching the market shares, and that just got me thinking to what you said about the, you know, the, about the footwear. Because that's such a market, isn't it?
It is. It is.
You know,
footwear, clothing.
Clothing.
All
of that. And now, see, this is what's happening. It's happening steadily, slowly, but it's happening. But because it's happening steadily and slowly, some of the big corporate organizations are not aware. Some are becoming aware.
Yeah.
And that's why one thing I've noticed, I'm having more and more meetings now.
Yeah.
And I still, in some cases, have to speak through their, I don't know what it is, concerns, trepidation, running scared because of this D&I rollback, or, and they wonder if we get involved with, and I'm like, this is an untapped market.
Mm.
Why are you pigeonholing it under the D&I? Why? Because this is business. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is.
This is business.
I think what you've just said and the work you've put into the report, really for people in the Black, brown, minority, ethnic communities, it should give us that confidence, really, to make our money work for us, and also, as has been highlighted in the report, continue supporting businesses, activities that align with our values.
Definitely.
Value. Yeah, like like that person said to you, they need us as much as we may need them.
Yeah, exactly.
And actually, I think we need each other more. We can build, more. Yeah.
We definitely do. And, you know, we was at an event the other week, weren't we? And it was just powerful being in a room.
Yes, amazing.
Everybody sharing their insights and sharing their knowledge. And then you go away more equipped. So when you're in your actual individual spaces, not collectively together, you can feel powerful and feel confident, because there's so much stuff that you have to combat in that moment, you know? And we just want to just get on with the work. But this is important, a part of it.
Yeah.
I think there's never been a better time to talk about economics. Never has there been a better time to teach in audiences that you are an investor, you know. So if we take away walking into, say, an establishment like yourselves, you know, to talk about wealth and stocks and shares and or savings and so on and so forth, but just from your daily decisions that you make, basically from who you purchase your shoes from, to who you buy your clothes from, to who you buy your makeup from, to who you decide to choose to be your mortgage provider or to get a loan to purchase your car or whatever it is, or a product for your business, to the supermarket, remember that we are keeping them in business. Remember that?
Yeah.
You know, when you walk into a department store, or when you buy a newspaper, or when you digitally connect to one of the magazines online, if you decide to remove all of that, I'm not saying that that's what somebody should do, but that, I want people to realize that they are somebody.
Yeah.
We are all of us.
Indeed.
Regardless of ethnicity, background, we are all people, and we're all important to the whole universe.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? To make things run,
indeed.
To run well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we definitely need to keep acknowledging all the time. It's a daily thought to remember that we are of value, and we are bringing contributions to the economy, and we are investors. And remember, the 4.5 billion is the disposable income.
Yeah.
But remember, before you even spend, within our community, that actually adds up to 300 billion. Because we have to remember, you might, when you get paid, whatever's working for you in your savings, all of that, and also where you spend as well, apart from disposable income, pre-everything, that's what collectively adds up to 300 billion.
Yeah, so all the bills that are paid out automatically, et cetera. Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
It, isn't it? And we're 20% of the population, probably even more, but 20% as is counted at this
point. Amazing.
Yeah.
You mentioned... Yeah. That, you know, you're not done yet.
No, I'm not done yet. I'm not
in true Lydia style.
Yes.
There's another report coming.
Yes. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. What is the focus? And actually, how can people support?
Thank you.
For the next iteration?
That's such a good question because... Like when you ask me questions, you know, because I'm a mind mapper in my brain, so my brain goes into all these different things.
Yes. But,
I want to do the next Black Pound, but this time there'll be a report, but it's an index.
Okay.
So, you know, in stock exchange, everything's indexed, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you get to see, it measures, even though we do this already, but it'd be really super clear to ensure that everybody understands that this is relevant for them, as in from people, actually people at university already know that it's relevant to them, but for all of us as a community, but also for businesses.
Mm.
So the next piece of study, which is we'll have a survey, we'll do probably the same amount as well, 5,000 plus, the most, you know, very comprehensive. Again, I'll always be looking into money, look into things like real estate, all of those sorts of things as well. Of course, we're looking to like retail as well. That's really important. Luxury, high net worth individuals. We were able actually to bring out information because we measured salary within our research. So we were able to see actually there's some really good high net worth individuals.
Yeah.
Of course, we know this already within the Black and multi-ethnic population in the United Kingdom, in fact, worldwide.
Yeah.
So it's to continue. So it's to relook at what we've done already, explore some other areas, but it's about, you know, and new stories will be told.
Yeah.
New insights will come to the table. We'll be able to probably measure a bit more about, you know, how many more Black-owned businesses have been opened, or, you know, multi-ethnic businesses have been opened. And one of the things we'll also keep doing is make sure we smash we'll do a bit of myth busting, because there's so many stories that if a Black business opens or a multi-ethnic business opens, the Nat rep, so when I say Nat rep, the white population would be not be interested in buying. But that's an absolute farce that came out of the research, especially the one we did with Channel 4 on Black in Business. It was so clear that the, you know, white audiences happily shop wherever.
Yes.
They're not thinking like that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy from here. I'm not going. They're not thinking that particular way.
It's that narrative, it's that the narrative. The media
that's what I mean.
Or the papers keep saying, but actually that's not the reality on the ground.
That's not the reality on the ground.
Wow.
So what I'm doing now, what I'm looking to do is I want to find another partner to partner with Backlight on the next study.
Mm-hmm.
And what they will have access to is not just a report, but it's all the data. And data is the new oil.
Data
has always been the oil, but data... People have to understand data is powerful. Everything is based on data.
Mm-hmm.
And our data has actually more is more attractive than anything right now. Forget about what's happening in the environment, all these conversations, which I don't want to put my attention more towards. I know where I'm going. You know, razor sharp focus.
Yeah.
Is that we have to keep displaying and telling more stories so we understand about our value, but how we're spending. You know, trends. Don't forget, we perceive trends when we do data. We can tell you what's up and coming.
Yeah.
I remember a few years back when we did the second Black Pound report, we were able to see that more grooming, male grooming, was an industry which was about to explode, was about to boom, and I've seen it.
Mm.
You know, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
So what I'm excited about this time as well is I've learned so much from stage, you know, the first report, the second. So can you imagine how crazy I feel about the third
one?
Wow. I've got so much insight because of what I hear, the feedback that I receive. Yeah. Universities who are now using our data, who are using our report, teaching students, marketing students, business students. I would never have known from that time when the woman told me you're not worth marketing to come back 25 plus years later to see that universities, Birmingham University, LSC, all these different universities have used the data. Or just when I'm at maybe at a networking event and business people say, we used your data the other day in a conversation.
Mm.
And sometimes I'm actually blown away still. I still get blown away of this data is actually means so much.
Yeah.
And it's creating a lot of change. And it would have never happened if also the population of the community didn't answer those questions, because I couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about people coming together, but
yeah,
more importantly, But more importantly, Lydia, this came onto your heart and you pushed through and you've just been going and going and going. And as you said, it was, several decades ago when you had that experience.
Yes.
And that seed was sown and you've just been consistent and committed to that vision. So thank you so much.
I think there's
even people who will never hear this interview, but who'll be benefiting from the work you've done and the work you'll continue to do. So keep on pushing.
I will do.
I'll be supporting you.
I would love all the listeners. I can provide you with a QR code or something, whatever, but they can download. I would love everybody that listens to this to download a free extract to the Black Pound report.
That's
so they
fantastic.
Can see that.
Thank you. We'll put the link or the QR code in the show notes.
Thank you so much. There's never enough time, is there?
There's never enough time.
Yeah.
Lydia, on the Wealth Conversation, there's a tradition where I ask each guest the same question, which is, what is the one wealth conversation you would like people to have?
The first thing that's come to mind is, what can you do to take care of your family with the wealth that you have right now? And in doing so, that's something that will definitely contribute towards generational wealth for the people you'll never get a chance to meet.
Amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
That's very powerful. And what are you doing with that disposable income that you have for your family?
Yeah.
I love it.
It doesn't have to be a lot, you know, because people think, you have to have thousands, you know, it can be very intimidating, but you can just have a small amount.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you can do something with what you've got.
Yeah.
It's really important.
I would recommend, you mentioned the book, Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice.
Yeah, by Dr. Dennis King.
For those who think that you need a lot to become wealthy, whatever wealth looks like to you.
Yeah.
I think that book is great because it shows you the journey of how people started from small acorns, as they say, and grew.
Yes.
And it also shows how community came together, because a lot of these people who are featured in the book had a network that they relied on.
Of course.
People who helped. It wasn't done on their own. They may have started on their own. But as your journey with the Black Pound Report has shown, you know, at the beginning you called on your network for help.
I did. I definitely
some of it was free labor.
But you know what? We all learned together.
Yes.
And what I want to also say is that obviously wealth, financial, but there's other things that contribute, you know, that are wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That's being healthy.
Yeah.
You know, paying it forward. There's so many things that contribute to the meaning of wealth. Mm. And I think that, you know, Think and Grow Rich does that. The good book, the Bible shows you what wealth is.
Yes.
Wisdom, number one.
Yes.
You know, those who walk with the wise will become wise.
That's definitely another podcast episode.
Yeah.
Focusing on what the Bible
teaches
us about wealth.
So much. Solomon, you know.
Yes.
Ask for wisdom first. Someone said to me the other day, actually, sometimes we go, oh, I want this much amount of money, but ask for wisdom first, because with the wisdom, we can make the right choices.
Indeed.
I'm always learning that, by the way.
Indeed.
Always learning that.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
Lydia, this has been an amazing interview. How can people get in touch with you if they want to work with you, whether it's on the Black Pound Report or coaching or consulting, which we didn't get into, but it's something you do. Mm-hmm. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
I'll say the best way to get in touch is they can send me an email. Yeah, it's lydia@backlight.uk.
Mm-hmm.
They can also find me on, you know, I'm across all the socials. I'm always sharing, evangelizing everywhere.
Right.
You know, putting Lydia Anwar.
Okay.
But most of all, you know, you can come to my website and you can book a consultation with me, and then we can, you know, we can help assess how we can work together, whether it's on auditing your business to find out if, you know, how mature your business is to get ready to access this amazing audience. So that's a maturity index audit we will do for the business. Mm-hmm. Obviously executive coaching, leadership coaching, or group coaching that we do as well. But most importantly, it's my big passion, is obviously the Black Pound Index. Get ready. You can speak to me about becoming a partner,
mm-hmm.
or you can subscribe to the existing data that we have. Yeah.
Fantastic. I'll put links to website, etc. in the show notes.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Lydia.
Thank you.
Thank you.